And now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's In the Green Room. Green is in, but what does that really mean for you? Join the gang for a fun and energetic half-glass, half-full perspective to what and how sustainability is the lifestyle for the future. It can really affect everything you do, from your health, wallet, environment, money, even your morals. So our goal, to help save the planet one show at a time. Now, welcome to the Green Room.
Welcome, everyone, to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
And I'm Chet. I hope everybody's having a great day. How's your week been so far?
Actually, pretty good. We had a great Father's Day with my dad, and I know you had a great Father's Day with Dad. And I know your dad's an amazing father. So a shout out to all the great dads out there. And I don't think one day should be Father's Day. Every day should be Father's Day. To every day being Father's Day. Woo! So we want to welcome our guest today. We've got Jim Hill. Say hello and tell us what you do. Give us your title.
Hi, my name is Jim Hill. I'm the Vice President of Arizona Law Enforcement Outreach and Support. I'm also a police officer, and I've been one for 33 years now.
Wow.
33 years, that's a long time.
Thank you for your service, then, keeping people safe and everything.
Okay, you guys are going to laugh at me, but I forgot to put my, I was going to wear my mask, and I'm looking for it as I'm fumbling around here, and I'm like, oh, it's around my neck. Anyway, I was going to try to wear it, but I think we're all 6 feet apart, so we're okay here.
Sure. Scoot away.
We're all 6 feet apart. So we are lucky because we've got a singer in studio, Cindy Hill, and she's going to be singing the, what are you going to be singing, Cindy?
Come to the mic, yeah.
God Bless America.
God Bless America. Woo! I think we should start with that. I really do. I think that we need some positivity, and just that song makes me always feel so good. And I think people need to start, you know, remembering that we all should be coming from love, and we all have to just spread the love and just, you know, not have any hate. And if you hear anything that's hateful, just, you know, correct it.
I feel like, you know, America's always it's been a work in progress the whole way, and it's been getting a better and better place for everybody. Like, you know, life in 2020 is way better than life was in 1920, and so on as you go back. So, you know, America's a work in progress, and that's one thing that's beautiful about it. And yeah, so I think people should always remember that we're lucky to have a country that's a democracy, and we can change the laws ourselves. And you know, I think we've been seeing that over the past few weeks.
So. I love that. And so, can we hear you sing, Cindy?
Sure.
All right. I'm gonna.
Yeah, you got to get up to the mic, or people won't be able to hear you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta be.
And you might want to put on your headset.
She Lysols the mics, though, so.
Yeah, they're all Lysol. They're all clean. Yes, you just put that on.
Do I need that on to sing?
No.
Okay, I'll put it on after because it might confuse me.
Yeah. Oh, you don't need it on.
Okay.
Just make sure you get on that mic so I can hear you.
Yeah, like within a few inches. Yeah.
Okay.
And these are Lysol today. Okay,
mine
great.
Smells like Lysol. So I'm,
mine does too.
I'm getting high over here. Like, what's the Lysol high over here? No, I'm kidding.
Can I start?
Yes.
Okay.
We're super excited.
Sitting down. We'll try this. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
That was very good, especially considering she kind of just put you on the spot. You didn't even know you were going to be singing. She was just like, you got one? And you're like, I guess. Yeah. Well, I mean,
you know, God always watches over. There's always something that happens, and then something better happens. I have to tell you, like, I have a lot of angels around me, because this would have been the first show we didn't have live music, because we had somebody say that they were going to be on the show, and then they ended up being out of town, blah, blah, blah. But you're here. But it's here. Great. Yay.
Well, thanks for asking me.
How long have you been singing?
Oh, wow. All my life, but I've done a few bands along the way, and I do a lot of things with the patriotic. Oh, I'm sorry. I do a lot of things that are patriotic, so I get asked a lot to come out and sing the national anthem and at different sporting
events.
That's
what we need right now. That's what we need right now. We need people. We need everyone to be spreading the love and stop hate. No more hate, and just be all about making our country better. And I think we also need to, you know, shop with our American dollar and only buy American-made products. I think that's really important right now. So
I'm so proud to be able to do it. So when somebody has asked me to do it, if I can do it, I'm coming out to do it. I'm always
happy
to.
So maybe we can hear a couple more, but we want to get to Jim here and hear.
She's God always the
America.
Boss.
God bless America. So Jim, tell us, you have been a police officer for how many years?
33 years.
33 years. That's a long time.
And married for 32 as of tomorrow.
Congrats. Yes.
How beautiful. Congrats.
Thank you.
Aw. So what does, how do you stay happily married for 32 years?
I spent 12 years on midnights.
That's a true story.
Okay, meaning you...
Oh, we saw each other in passing. I was asleep and she'd go to work. And...
Well, being a cop's wife, I have to tell you, is really very difficult. I wouldn't wish it upon anybody out there. But I have, and I am the proudest person in the world. I have the best spouse. He's the best police officer, and every day I am thankful for him and all that he does for our country.
Well, this is really funny because Kathleen Wynn, who will be here shortly to speak, she said, "I've got the greatest guy." And about a month ago, she said, "I've got the greatest." 3 weeks ago, she said, "I've got the greatest guy to come on the show." I've known him a long time, Jim Hill, and now that I see you and met you today for the first time, I remember you in a uniform, so that means you must have pulled me over.
What? With the way you drive, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Oh, my God. Like GTA.
But I remember you're nice. I can tell that, with every job, any job out there, I don't care if you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're the Pope, everybody, a teacher, everybody can be nice. And everything you do, you can say something in a nice way, right?
So, absolutely. Be kind.
Be kind. Be kind. That's right. Spread the love and be kind. So what was it like being an officer for that many years, and how do you feel about what's going on right now, and what are some ways that you think that things can improve?
Well, that covers a lot of territory. Well,
tell us what we want to know.
I came from a small little town in Pennsylvania. My first cop job was outside Washington, D.C. during the crack epidemic. I was there at Ground Zero. So it was, everything you see in the movies really did happen. It was a lot of crash course policing. You got thrown to the wolves, kind of. But it was a neighborhood. It was...
So no training?
Well, you get your academy, but it doesn't prepare you. When you grow up in a small town, you get into an area that's known by the state as a drug trafficking neighborhood.
Wow. Okay.
So you could park down the street and watch crack be sold 50 feet from you.
Wow, that's scary. It's scary.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? As a brand new cop, it was just a lot of eye-opening things.
How old were you?
About 22, 23.
So you were a kid.
I was. I still remember that first call when I'm searching a building. I have my gun out, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is real.
Oh, that's scary. Terrifying. I can't imagine Chet with a gun. He's a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would have that level of, bravery and all that. I think it's amazing that you were able to do that job for so long. That's amazing. Because that would be just such a high-stress, you know, terrifying job. You know, your life is on the line every day. So I think it's amazing the police that are out there that are doing great work. You know, they deserve nothing but our applause. So,
well, thank you. While we were doing, I was doing that. Cindy was finishing up at University of Maryland. And it was one of those, okay, it's your turn, we'll move as a family. So we take turns moving. So we ended up back in Pennsylvania, and it was a small town. So I go from big city to small town, and you know, it's a college town. So it was a hopping place, and got to do some good things. I started getting more involved in community policing. I was a crime prevention officer. Because Cindy, we actually lived in the dorms. She was a hall director, so we lived as a married couple in the dorms with all the students. And I figured if I was doing a bad job as a cop, our car would not be there when I came out one day. So the fact that we never got our car vandalized because of me, I did a pretty good job.
No, because of me, that's a whole different story.
So do you feel like you've seen a lot of change through the years? And
I've seen a lot of the violence level come up. Mm-hmm. When I started out, it was there's a fist fight, and you know, you broke it up. The two guys went their separate ways, and that's all it was. And it's progressed from, oh, he's down on the ground. We'll start stomping on him, throwing people through windows, and then weapons. So it's got progressively more violent on these calls.
Well, how do you feel about what happened with Floyd? And I mean, I know that's a really touchy subject, but I mean, that's
more
definitely horrific.
Well, more specifically, they knew that the officer that, you know, killed him, murdered him, they knew he was a bad apple. There was like 12 formal complaints of excessive force against him. So it was essentially somebody that was literally had slipped through the cracks that should not have been on the job whatsoever. So I think the thing people should be focusing on more than saying, get rid of the police, because we obviously need the police to keep our society afloat. We should be saying, how are we going to root out those bad apples effectively? Because whatever system was in place there was not working, because he should not have even been on the job.
That's true. He should have been
in jail. What's crazy mm-hmm. about that is he had all those complaints, but yet he was a field training officer.
Yeah.
He was training people.
Yep. Those other officers, it was like their first couple weeks on the job. Yeah.
Well, watching that video is heart-wrenching. I mean, that's nothing we ever teach anybody. That's nothing we ever condone.
It's pure evil. It's pure evil.
I was a defensive tactics instructor. You don't do that.
And it's so evil how the other cops just watched. And how do you, I mean, that's crazy that they were just standing there. Why didn't they stop him?
I'm mystified. We actually have scenarios when you go through the academy that you'll fail if you don't step in and stop what's going on.
Really?
So I don't understand.
So that's not even part of the training.
Well, I think that's why they've been charged too now at this point, I believe.
They have.
Right? Yeah. So they're not getting out scot-free. They're culpable
free.
Too.
I think all four of them should be equally, you know, be in jail for the rest of their lives.
What's curious is they haven't released the body cam footage yet. We've seen footage for everything but their body cameras. So it'll be interesting to see what was actually being said amongst the officers when it was going on.
Well, I'm wondering, I'm curious why there isn't an app out there right now where, let's say I get pulled over by the police officer. I see you, you're pulling me over, and I touch, you know, I freak out. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting pulled over. So I tap the app and it turns it on and it tells me what to do. Because
there are apps out there for that.
Well, hold on. And then the app is filming me. And then you know when you walk up that app is being monitored by people that are watching the cameras or that can go back and see. And so that app and that video is also, so that way I'm protected because the video of a bad cop can just turn that video off and say, oh, it malfunctioned or, you know, I lost it, whatever. Something went wrong, you know, when they actually want to kill somebody because, you know, some of these cops, if they're that evil, you know, it seems like they want to bully the bad ones, not the good ones, the bad ones. So then you have this app and it's paying attention to everything I'm doing, but then I can also be filming the cops and it's allowed, it's legal. What do you guys think of that?
Well, I think it would be, you're basically saying if the body cams were more of like public available as public footage, that would be essentially the same thing, right? which I think there have been people calling for that, you know, ever since the George Floyd incident, because there are other incidents that are now coming into question where there's no footage, really, like the Elijah McClain death. They're now asking for that investigation to be reopened. I don't know if you guys were familiar with that one. It happened last year in August of 2019. Yeah, in Aurora, Colorado, and he was held in a chokehold for 15 minutes. And then when the paramedics got there, they shot him with ketamine as like a tranquilizer because he said he was having an anxiety attack and couldn't breathe. Then he died of a heart attack. And there was nobody even lost their job or anything. But it was basically just there's some malpractice somewhere, whether it was the paramedics were injecting him with ketamine or the officers putting him in the chokehold for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that case to even make a comment. But as far as there are apps out there. You can actually talk to Siri and have her start recording on your phone.
But I'm talking about a different thing. I'm talking about an app where there's people like monitoring and telling you what to do. Yeah.
Okay.
Like they're sitting there. It's a business, and they're sitting there telling me what to do, and then the video. I'm videotaping the cops, so I'm getting protected by
Well, it'd have to be somebody that you just trust with legal advice. Because
they
tell you, no, you don't get out of the car, but case law says I can order somebody out of the car, and now we're at a conflict here because a third party's now entered the conversation.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. It's an idea somehow, I think, because if maybe you pay for the service,
right.
And you just pay like you pay for your security alarm, and so in case you get pulled over, you... like you said, kind of have advice on what to do.
Most cops these days assume they're being videotaped. I mean, in Minnesota, they knew they were on tape. They were staring right at the people. They were recording them.
That's surprising.
They didn't. To me, it looked like he didn't think he was doing anything wrong.
Well, if he had like 12 abuse claims against him, he kept doing his job. He must have been thinking, "Oh, I'm doing an okay job." Like,
that department actually has a thing where they trained the carotid hold with a leg. I've never seen that in any other police department in the nation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so hold on. So that is the training for that police department?
Yes.
Well, then that person's really the one that is also responsible.
Well, and that's the thing in police work. When you are a trainer, and if you train another officer, you call it vicarious liability, you're on the hook for the rest of your career and their career for anything you taught them.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, yeah, that was one thing I was going to say. I had never seen a police officer restrain someone like that before. Normally, they are like on the back with them in the cuffs, and that's it. But that's why I was shocked by that.
Well, we trained to set them up because you don't want them on their back because of positional asphyxia. And if they're on their stomach, their arms are behind their back. Every time they breathe and you're pushing down, the rib cage gets shorter and shorter. They can't breathe, and they're going to suffocate. So we train to get them up as soon as they can.
But when you watch that video, Floyd's video, I mean, he's trying to kill him. I mean, it doesn't look like he's just trying to...
No, he wasn't.
He looks like he's trying to kill him.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to help. I couldn't understand why he was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So going forward, how do you think they could set up a system that would effectively get the bad apples out of the police department? Do you think it's, having more routine psych evaluation checks? Do you think it's more routine training and testing or... do you think maybe it's having a third party overseeing the complaints and about abuse of power, that kind of stuff, or maybe a combination of all those type of solutions?
Oh, just so you know, people are asking on Facebook for us to be louder, so we all have to talk a little bit louder. Oh,
okay.
Okay. Ironically, I'm trying to talk softer.
But yeah, what do you think is the path forward so that officers that are in that position that have had a lot of complaints about them, they won't be on the job anymore? Because that's a problem not only in Minneapolis, that's a problem all over the country, from what I've been hearing.
Well, you have to sort out whether they're valid complaints or just complaints. Because some areas, you're going to get a complaint if you're a proactive officer and you're making a lot of arrests, they're going to take you off the street because they figure, okay, I'll just make a complaint, they'll pull them off the street while they investigate it. So you have to go through the due process. You can't get rid of the due process at all.
Oh, I agree with that, definitely. Yeah.
But, training is a big issue. And when you talk about psych evals, we have to take a psych evaluation when we get hired. And so there's a baseline. But the other thing with that, if you're going to retest us, then there should be a caveat there. If all of a sudden we no longer fit for duty, you have to give us a medical out. You broke me, you bought me, kind of thing.
That makes sense because it's such a high-intensity stress job. So,
well, it is high intensity, and I always laugh when people ask me, you know, what are your, you know, big accomplishments? Well, the last time I took a polygraph, I'd been a cop for 28 years, and I passed the polygraph. I'm like, Larry, there you go.
Nice, nice.
So.
Well, I have a question. What if something that Chet's girlfriend mentioned today, what if you had cops that specialized in different, you know, like certain cops, or they only handle murders, these cops handle domestic abuse, these cops handle just traffic, and you're trained just for traffic, or you're trained just for domestic abuse, or you're trained just for homicides. What do you think of that idea? That's kind of,
well,
maybe...
We have that after the patrol makes their contact. Mm-hmm. So the initial contact and all these complaints, patrol officers go out on, and they sort out what's going to happen next. So even if they make an arrest in domestic violence, most departments, the domestic violence detectives will review those to make sure that all the probable cause is met for the arrest to actually be valid. But the initial contact and even the homicides and all those are all made by the patrol officers there. And as a patrol officer, you're kind of a jack of all trades.
Okay. So essentially, that system is already in place. But I think what people are mostly trying to implement are basically a police officer that would be solely for de-escalation purposes. So that way, if there was, you know, an issue at like a high school or... you know, some area that's, you know, probably not going to have a weapon and probably not going to be like a super dangerous situation, you'd be sending someone that's, you know, more specialized for de-escalation purposes? Or is there already something like that as well?
Well, there's de-escalation training for everybody. But again, when you're talking about patrol calls, it's kind of whoever's available at the time when the call kicks out, that's who's going to go. You'll try to get people there. We have crisis intervention team people that are trained in psych evaluations and, you know, things that initially we can get people help right there. So we'll make referrals, get people on the scene. We'll have different specialties. We'll have the DUI guys. We'll call them over. And the whole point would be that, you know, as a patrol cop, I got calls holding, bringing the DUI guy. I turn the call over to him, and I'm on to the next thing.
Okay, I see how it works. So they essentially already have that system in place of specialized officers.
Right.
Yeah.
Welcome, Kathleen Wynn. She's here in studio to join this conversation.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks, Kinga.
Welcome.
Can you tell everybody
room.
What you are all about? What is your passion and your job and your history?
My history. So I was the wife of a law enforcement officer. And
we need you a little bit louder and red on the mic. Sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. I was the wife of a law enforcement officer for 8 years. I worked for the Attorney General's office. I work with
Attorney General's office. Okay.
I work with law enforcement here in the Valley primarily to fight sex trafficking, but in many of the causes that they work with. And I'm a huge supporter of law enforcement and see the value that we have to have people that enforce our laws.
We appreciate everything you do. And then you're also on the board for Maricopa County.
I am. I'm on the governing board for Maricopa Community College. But tonight, anything I say is not their views. Those are my views. So I just want to make that distinction. Although we have a police department, which Jim works for at Mesa Community College. And really, they do wonderful work. But primarily, I work against anti-sex trafficking. And that's really where I see the vulnerabilities in the community and how critically important our law enforcement is.
How could you even take care of that situation at all if you didn't have policemen?
Well, there's so many situations that we have to recognize that traffic or domestic violence or when there's families having fights or just, I just came from an event and there were protesters and the police had to disengage the protesters to protect the 4,000 people that were there.
You just came from Trump's.
I did. Yeah. I didn't know if that was okay to say. Yeah.
Yes.
I did. And so there were protesters. And they were a small group and the police were there. But it's really important that people understand that it's usually a small faction of people that are disrupting. But when they do, they displace the rest of the community. I'm all for protesting, if you have
peaceful
protesting. But when you endanger people and you put people at risk, then it's a different situation. And
then it's a crime.
Well, it is, but then we look at what's been going on in Seattle, right? And I think it's been 10 days, a week, whatever it's been. And it took a murder. It took two murders over the weekend for them finally to say, oh, you can't have this autonomous land. You can't just go in and declare that this is no longer part of the country. We're no longer going to abide by the law, which is what happened. And two people died. And so I think that's what we have to understand, is that if you don't have restrictions and rules and boundaries, you get chaos.
Well, how were they even allowed to do that? I mean, how did Trump let them continue?
I don't think that Trump allowed it, that we have states' rights. The mayor in that city told the police to stand down. The police were complaining. The police union complained vehemently about it. And they couldn't even get in. I mean, the gentleman that got shot, they couldn't even get in because they had barricaded themselves.
So the mayor might have kind of been playing chess, because he might have been saying, we're not a police state.
It's a woman, but just so you know.
Or she.
Yeah.
But she might have just been playing chess and saying, okay, you can do this, and you're going to see that it's not going to work because people are going to start to die. Because, I mean, those people were exercising their right of free speech, and, you know, America's a free country, so they were, you know, it's beautiful they had the right to try to do that, but it didn't work. So it's good that she gave them the taste of freedom, but, like, it's not going to work. They need the police.
It's anarchy.
Well, I was going to say, they had free speech. They totally had free speech. What they didn't have the right to do was to desecrate buildings and to move people that were paying rent, that have paid taxes, that own those buildings in that 7-square block. They didn't get to displace them because they were upset about whatever they were upset about. And I think that when we allow that, and it was allowed to continue, that sets a really bad precedent. I mean, for any law enforcement around the country, because it makes it dangerous.
So it played it into law enforcement's hands, because now everybody's saying, we need the police. That we don't want that to happen here.
No. It's almost like a little mini civil war, actually.
It was really disconcerting.
Definitely.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a failed experiment.
Exactly, yes.
You want to do anarchy? Here's how it happens.
And it did not work.
First thing to do is set up a border wall and border guards.
Imagine, right?
Like, so basically started having police immediately.
Exactly. So,
you know what I would have done, though?
The hypocrisy and irony is hilarious.
It is hilarious.
If I was the president, I would have said, all right, all criminals, go to that little area and go have at it. I mean, seriously, you don't want any cops?
Vote Kinga 2024. No, yeah.
I love it.
Yes, master.
Thank you, Robin. Well, so what are your ideas, Kathleen, since you, you know, you were attorney general?
I was not the attorney general. Please don't make that mistake. I worked for the attorney general.
I mean, you worked.
Yeah, sorry. Let's not start bad rumors.
I'm sorry. Worked for the attorney general.
Yeah.
You've been so experienced with all of this, and I know your husband helped design the helicopter, Apache helicopter. So you're really involved with it a lot. And what is your solution for how we can, Black Lives Matter and have cops not, you know, be racist? And
I'm gonna do a twist on Black Lives Matter.
Okay,
I'm gonna say all Black Lives Matter. So what I mean by that is, there's people that are upset. Everyone agrees that what happened to George Floyd was completely unacceptable.
Evil
and unconscionable. But in Minnesota, they burned down black businesses. They burned down the place that they said they were standing up for. We're standing up for black lives. But they were only standing up for the black lives where they could go in and loot, where they could go in and steal. But they were stealing from black businesses. So where were they really standing for? They weren't really doing what they said they were doing. They were not taking care of black lives. They were not supporting black lives. They were supporting some, chaos and theft and stealing and just, you know, breaking into the Nike store and getting their Air Jordans or whatever it was. But they really didn't do what they said they were standing for.
I love what you're saying, because that doesn't show you that Black Lives Matter.
Right.
That's right.
And it's not all lives matter. And that does, I believe that also. But if you say, I'm standing for Black Lives, then let's work on Chicago. Over 200 murders last weekend. Let's really start to focus on the places where fathers are leaving families, where the cost of not taking care of our minorities in education, in jobs. This president, quite frankly, and I don't want to get on that soapbox, but this president has done more for minorities than the people that are always complaining about we're not doing enough for minorities. So this has been the lowest jobless rate for African Americans in this country. And so during this coronavirus, this was such a setback. And then to have people say we're standing for Black Lives, but then go and destroy. So you got now got businesses who had gone and were creating an economy inside these some of these really rough neighborhoods saying, we're leaving now. We're not going to stay. They take away their jobs. They take away those businesses. So who really, the minorities will get hurt because of the way that they've chosen to protest. I'm not saying peaceful protest, but in the violence mm-hmm. and in
the burning and the rioting.
The tearing down. You know, we have a history.
There's a really unfortunate aspect to this, though, because it basically created a double-edged sword because there are like so many different cases where there have been peaceful protests. Eric Garner, Breonna Taylor, and none of those officers have been arrested or charged yet. And then they go and reward the rioting by charging those officers. They should have been charged, but they also should have came forward and said, we're also going to, you know, look into all these other cases and see if those investigations need to be reopened so that it's not incentivizing rioting about all those other cases where there have been, you know, questionable police killings. And
I do agree that they need to go back and the, whoever did police killings need to be in behind bars.
Well, yeah, like Breonna Taylor, she was killed in her own home.
In her own bedroom.
Yeah. Right. And those cops are still, or two out of the three are still on the job right now. And that should not be the case.
The investigation is still going on for those.
Yeah.
I just want to make a small point. In our country, we have something called due process. And we don't have process by the media. But we've become a process by the media. And quite frankly, you know, George Floyd, there was a video. It was pretty convincing, right? And pretty compelling.
Very.
But what we start to have to realize is that we do have a legal process. And we may not like that, but that if we don't honor that and we start to predetermine and prejudge and decide who's guilty and who's innocent, you get mob rule. And that becomes even more dangerous. And I think that we have to go back and investigate. We have to all the laws belong to all the people. Everyone is obligated to those laws, including law enforcement. But it has to be, justice has to be equal. And I don't know if justice is always equal and fair, but we have to understand that the laws apply to everybody. And if you break the law, no matter whether you have a badge or not, you still have to be held accountable.
Totally. 100% agree.
Okay, I totally agree. Okay, that was great. So how do you feel about all this, Jim? And can you interject with?
Well, you know, I stated before about due process. I'm also an association president, so I've heard of the evil union keeps people on the job, but it's, all we're here to do is protect due process. If somebody's a bad guy and they need to be gotten rid of, document it, do it the right way, and get rid of them. I've seen people get fired that should have been fired. You know, I don't stand in the way if you're doing the job correctly. But it's one of those, the rush. And there's times where administrations want to get people that are speaking their minds out, and that's what we have to step in and go, well, hang on, what exactly are you alleging? Let's do the due process here, and then you find out there wasn't anything to the internal politics. But all the investigations should be, I mean, anything where we use force should be investigated. But I also believe those who are doing the investigation, because people talk about a civilian oversight board, you need to go through the training to understand what use of force actually means and what these things do.
Yeah, I think civilian oversight board is not a good idea, but mm-hmm. veteran oversight board is a great idea because military vets have a ton of training and they know when force needs to be used. And I think that would be a good idea potentially because they're a third party who has been trained in combat and how to restrain people and all that kind of stuff. You know, because civilians obviously don't know all the intricacies of being law or what it takes to be a part of law enforcement and stuff like that. So
yeah, law enforcement's running about 19% veterans as far as the overall. So we have a pretty decent mix, but even that you have to consider the rules of engagement are differently, you know, between what you're allowed to do overseas, what the courts say we can do here or not do.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I just meant that people that are, you know, thinking that just a bunch of civilians who have never had any type of combat training or experience should be overseeing law enforcement, I just think that's kind of an outlandish idea. It's unrealistic. Someone that was at least at some point trained in some type of law enforcement, I think.
Well, I think so, too. I think you should have to go to school for it. It shouldn't just be like, how long of a course is it now for you to become a cop?
I think it's 750 hours at the academy.
So how long is that?
I don't know how many weeks.
How many weeks would that be, Chet? You're the mathematician.
I don't know how long the academy is.
Lily, can you find out?
So 31 and a quarter days, like, straight.
Wow.
That's it? Okay, so that's not very much.
She's saying is you're doing 24 hours a day, not 8-hour days. So you have to break that down into.
But still, that's a very short course. I mean, you have a gun in your hand and you're making a decision, about somebody's life. So
they're about what? 8 weeks. But that's not the only thing. When you you go to the academy, you'll do the academy. When you come out, most agencies.
21 weeks. Okay. I don't think that's long enough. I don't think that's long of it.
Well, I think it's more important that they have, annual training. So that way they are staying sharp on their skills.
That's good.
Well, yeah, because it just like anything else, you get good at something and then you don't practice it again for 4 years. And then you put yourself back in that pressure situation. It's going to be really tough to perform on the same level you would if you'd been staying on top of it.
And what about combining? I can't remember who suggested this to me, but I was like, that's pretty smart. What about combining the fire department with the police department and having way more training so you have a firefighter that's also a policeman?
You're mixing cats and dogs.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's not a good idea. But I oppose that idea.
I always say siblings are the ones who fight the worst, but we make fun of each other. But honestly, we do a lot of things together, but it's different mindsets.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're all geared towards, the EMS side, the medical side, and we're geared to crisis is over, next call. So we can hand them off to them to do the next step.
So it does
one thing that we haven't really covered yet that I think is one of the biggest solutions to all these problems and just getting our crime rates down is investing in education. Like, I think that crack situation you first were in at Washington, D.C., I think that partially is because there's a notoriously very bad public school system in that area. So it kind of is perpetuating a gang lifestyle for that area from what I've heard.
Well, let me flip that a little bit around. One of my gang cases came out of North Scottsdale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we ended up doing three gangs that we identified through the high schools. And I'll give you a little bit. I was listening to jail calls after I arrested one of the guys, and his dad is saying, I'm not going to spend another $20,000 on an attorney for you.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's, you can say the education is a component, but it's not the all and all be all. What I think.
Oh, I agree. There's always going to be somebody there that's a bonehead that's going to find their way into doing something illegal. I agree with that. Yeah. But I mean, in general, there's some people that wouldn't fall into crime if they, weren't out of school at 2 p.m. and they had extracurricular and stuff like that to do. So, yeah. But I agree. There's never going to be a world without crime. Humans have human nature, and they like to do some messed up things sometimes.
Well, for the gang members I've interviewed, and I spent 8 years as a gang detective, the one overriding thing is either a non-existent father or a non-involved father.
Really? Okay, so you 8 years experienced with basically arresting gang members, and what were the age groups of the gangs?
Depends on the gang I was working.
Wait, is there any way we can talk more about the North Scottsdale gang? I went to Notre Dame Prep, which is the most opposite of a gang type school ever. So it's so hard for me to imagine any North Scottsdale type gang. But
we want to hear about
that. Yeah, this is funny to me.
This is probably, most of their stuff was happening, I think, in 2007. Okay. And it was.
And what were they doing? Was it just drugs, or
you know what? It started out as desert parties and fights, and then it became where's the party? We're doing a home invasion.
Seriously?
Yeah. So we had armed home invasions. We had shootings. I actually had a murder that was connected to them.
Wait, wait. And what were the age groups of these gangs?
The victim was 17 and the martyr. So they, you know, we were getting them after, but they were mostly, you know, 16, 17, 18.
That's crazy.
Wait, they were 16, 17, and 18
when they started getting involved. The National Gang Youth Survey said 12 is the age for recruitment now for gang members.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So at 12 years old, they start recruiting you to... And how do they recruit them?
They're looking for that father figure, that family.
Oh, wow.
So, hey, I'll hang out with us. We'll take care of you. We're your new family. Hey, I'll get you some new sneakers. Here's some money. And pretty soon, you know, hey, I need you to do this now that I've done this for you.
So what kind of trends have you been seeing as far as, like, has there been, like, spikes in gang activity or has it been going down? Because I don't know if this just sounds privileged or spoiled or something, but I always just feel like Phoenix and Tempe and Scottsdale are so safe. And, you know, I guess that's because the police are doing a great job, but...
Well, our own worst enemy there.
Yeah.
One of the things, we are our own worst enemy, is we don't talk about the gangs that commit the crime. And that's one of those things we've had internal arguments about, and I'm always a proponent of, we need to let people know it's a gang crime. Oh, we don't want to give the gang any credit. Well, if you don't know the Bloods are active in your neighborhood, you wouldn't know what to look for. But, you know, we have active Crips and Blood sets and...
But I do kind of see how there's both sides of that argument, though.
Exactly.
You don't want to glorify...
You don't want anything. Them going out and doing something so they can get in the paper.
Exactly, yeah. So that is a delicate situation there.
So they would travel in packs doing these crimes? Or do they spread out?
Well, they'll travel wherever they need to. We the 101, when it first became open, we called it the criminal highway, because now everybody can get around the valley easier. We're seeing it on light rails where it's snatch and grabs that they're doing, and they've actually got an investigator assigned to that. We'll see little pop-up gangs. They'll just get together for a couple crimes, call themselves something, and disappear back to their home gangs.
Wow. You never hear about this. So we definitely need you cops. We definitely need you guys.
Well, one thing that I feel like has been horrible as far as you know, making it seem like gang life is a cool thing is how they just let Tekashi 6ix9ine walk or whatever. Have you been following that at all?
Oh, I have.
I cannot believe that. Like, I absolutely hate him. I feel like he's like,
okay, I don't know who
such
that
an
is.
Awful musician. He has the tattoos all over his face and just very, very ugly, but not good music either. But he was in a gang and he like snitched on all of the other members to avoid jail time. And then somehow he got back out to being free. He's free now, literally. So it's basically like incentivizing people to join gangs. So they're just like, oh, I could just like, you know, rat on the other people and then go join another gang. It's like a horrible message. They should have locked him up for life.
Well, here's the thing.
Made an example.
There is no honor among the criminals.
Yeah.
Of all the ones I had in custody, only one ever asked for an attorney. And they all thought they were smarter. And they all ratted on each other. So, I would get out the roster and photos of everybody I knew was in the gang, and I'd say, without names on it, tell me who they are, what they do, who would I buy a gun from, who's the most violent. And they would just start naming names.
So you just got to catch one, and then you're good.
Oh, yeah.
And once again, the age group is around 16, 17, 18?
Yeah, for the street gangs, and then you'll get into the prison gangs, and the guys, once they get to prison, and the prison gangs basically call the shots on the streets, and it's all broken down by race.
But they're in the prison?
Running the show.
From the prison?
Yeah.
How does that happen? How do they communicate?
They'll do phone calls, three-way phone calls. They'll send messages back and forth. They've actually sent our special forces in to interview these guys because if they get captured, how are you sending those notes to each other?
Okay, so also, why would the people outside of the prison listen to somebody that's in prison?
Well, because they're telling them, if you don't obey what we say, you're going to end up here one day and need protection, or some of your family's going to show up here. So you either pay homage, or when you get here, it's going to be very bad for you.
Interesting. So what are some more solutions for what we can all How can we help? How can we and our listeners that are, you know, just pondering on what they can do, and you know, how can we help the Black Lives Matter? You know, what can we do to stop cops that are bad?
Well, I think one of the biggest things for all of this is back to basics for community policing. Over the last decade, we've seen police budgets cut because it's all the Great Recession. It's, you know, do more with less. Well, you get to a point in policing where you do less with less. So you ask a police department, how much time do you give your officer to go out and walk the neighborhood for community policing and just hang out? They'll just stare at you.
So community policing, you mean for you to be friendly with your...
Park the car and walk the neighborhood.
I love that. Yeah.
I mean, I grew up as a back east cop, and that was the thing. Get out and walk the beat.
Okay, so I love that.
So that way you can tell if something's up. You know the neighborhood. You know the people. You can see immediately, oh, this person should not be here. They're, you know, something fishy going on or something.
Well, and once you know the people and they're comfortable with you, I mean, I've had that where I get the head nod to the guy standing in the corner in the shadows, and I'm like, oh, he's the guy I need to talk to.
Okay. Well, I get what you're saying, because we had just really great cops in Paradise Valley, and I got to know all of them, and I was friends with all of them, and I still am. You feel like, you know, you're friends with them, and I think that you want to. I think it helps the police officer, because then if, you know, you make a mistake and you're speeding and they pull you over, it's not mm-hmm. as uncomfortable to be pulled over.
Right. It works both ways, the comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I see a lot of states now are putting in, the body cameras must be on any contact with anybody, you know, outside your patrol car. Well, if you do that, how comfortable are you talking to me in a neighborhood where there's bad guys? And you're just a person who wants to tell me what's going on in the neighborhood. Now I got to record that, and now it's available for everybody in the world to see and hear. So there's double-edged to everything.
Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, there is always going to be like a pro and a con to every right. solution they try to implement.
And there's got to be a middle ground for everything.
Exactly. But one thing that's terrifying, though, is that sometimes the body camera can be on and there can be the footage of the officer, you know, committing, you know, excessive force, and they still somehow get away with it. I don't know if you were familiar with the shooting of Daniel Shaver. It happened in Mesa back in 2016, and there was the body footage. I do not think the officer should have fired, and he fired 3 rounds. He was ordering the victim to crawl towards him, and he was intoxicated and he stumbled, but he didn't have a weapon on him, and he just shot him dead. And the body cam footage was there. It'll make your stomach turn watching.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up after the show.
He's back on the job making $2,500 a month in pension because of the mental stress of the trial. I'm putting in air quotes. But if you were, you watched the video, it was very clear that he wanted to have the power in the room, and he shouldn't have a badge. And he still somehow slipped through the cracks, and there's footage of him doing it. So,
well, the original call was a guy waving a gun around, and he said his claim was he was reaching behind him. He thought he was reaching for the gun, and everybody's like, well, you look like he's reaching for his pants, to pull his pants up. I'd have been hard-pressed to pull the trigger. He was prosecuted, he was tried, and a jury found him not guilty. Not the officers. So it was an officer who put the homicide case together against him. He was given a post-traumatic stress disorder medical pension. He's not a police officer anymore.
Oh, okay. He's not an officer anymore.
No, he'll never be a police officer again.
Oh, okay. But that's good that he lost his badge.
But if he murdered somebody that
I did not know that it was tried by a jury. I did not realize
was he black too?
No. But I know that they were called there initially because he was he had a BB gun, I believe, right?
Well, yeah. Nobody knew it was a BB gun at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the jury trial found him not guilty.
Yeah. See, that one was mind-boggling to me because, like, the footage I thought was pretty clear that it was, you know, some type of an excessive use of force. But, you know, if the jury found him not guilty, they found him not guilty.
All the officers I know were shocked that they found him not guilty. So we don't know, what evidence they were shown that we don't know about.
Yeah, there must have been more evidence or something because that footage seemed pretty damning. But I'm happy to know that he's not on the job anymore. I must have misread the article. But,
Well, I still think that if somebody's unarmed and they get shot and they get killed, I don't think a police officer should get any special treatment when they're being tried. It should be like your
qualified
regular person.
Immunity. That's what lot of cities that have been passing laws getting rid of qualified immunity.
Well, qualified immunity is about a lawsuit. So you can be sued even if you don't know the law existed that you broke while you were doing anything, or it could be passed later on and you still get sued. So it's not about the criminal side of it. It's more sue you personally.
I thought that can be applied on a criminal level if they're saying that your job was like what led you to doing the crime.
Well, that wouldn't fall under qualified immunity. It would just be justifiable homicide.
Oh, okay. So maybe some people are misunderstanding the two then. But I think that any situation where, I think going back to the body cam footage idea, I think that is the step in the right direction, having body cam footage on. If they ever have to draw their weapons, then it could automatically start up something like that.
Well, body camera overwhelmingly has proven more officers innocent of complaints than it ever
showed them
guilty.
So it's perfect. It's showing that there's a lot of good cops out there that are doing the right thing. So.
And what I say is if the gun's pulled and it kicks on, or you turn your overhead lights on in your patrol car, because when you're in that moment and, oh my God, I'm going to the man with the gun call, the last thing I'm thinking about is how many switches do I need to touch?
Exactly. Yeah. It needs to be something automatic so that they don't have to worry about it.
Right. But if I'm sitting in the car talking to my partner about our boss, it shouldn't be on.
Yeah, exactly. You should. It's like any other job where you want to just chat and shoot the breeze. You shouldn't always be surveilled while you're doing that. I agree with that. But
Well, Bill, we would love to have you back on our show again. Will you come back on the show?
Oh, sure.
And there's so much more we want to talk to you about, and we want to close with Cindy singing Amazing Grace. But we're here saving the planet
one show at a time. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun talking about ways that we could potentially, make the police even more protective for society. So,
well, I love the police. I think there's a few bad apples, obviously, like the ones that are doing bad things out there right now. But most are amazing, and we're very thankful and grateful for the service.
The quote I always remember is, the problem with hiring police officers is you have to hire them from the human race.
Yes. Exactly. Well, in every field, you've got some bad apples. So we will close out with this beautiful lady, Cindy, singing Amazing Grace. And we are looking forward to having you back on because we have so much more to talk about.
You bet.
So to be tuned.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Here live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. or anytime on demand 24/7 on StarWorldWideNetworks.com.